Hello and welcome to the Deep Track Podcast, an exploration of watches, trends, and culture with a few adventures along the way. I'm your host, Blake Bettner. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome my friend Tom Place to the podcast. You may know him better as Expedition 16610 from Instagram or T Place from the TGN Slack. Tom is one of my favorite people from the community. Well, there's a lot of great people in this community, to be fair, but Tom is certainly one of the more interesting people to talk to. He is so named Expedition 16610 for having lost a Submariner reference, 16610, in a lake in upstate New York in the 90s, and his efforts more recently to recover that watch from the bottom of that lake for over the last few years. He does this by diving the bottom of this lake with some metal detectors. We get into how this happens, how it's going, how it started, the story of him losing the watch in this episode, which is all really interesting. His day job, however, is a stuntman and stunt coordinator in the film and TV industry. He's worked on some really incredible big-name movies and TV shows. We talk about a lot of that stuff as well and how his career got started in that realm. He's also done some really cool things in the video game industry, like motion capture type work for Rockstar Games. So we talk a little bit about that as well. Tom has some great insights into these worlds, and I hope you enjoy hearing about them as much as I did discussing them with him. Before we get into that, a quick reminder that the Deep Track is on YouTube. Go over there and subscribe if you'd like to see the videos that are posted weekly. And with Watches and Wonders coming up, there'll be a lot more videos going up in the month of April as well. All right, with that out of the way, let's get into our discussion with Tom Place. Tom Place, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for joining me, man. It's good to see you.
Happy to be on here, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. So people might not know this. You were one of the first people that I was trying to get onto the podcast when I launched this, which was back in December. It was just going into the holiday season, I suppose it was.
Yeah, we had the TGN meetup in the city, and we were chatting about it at there. So yeah.
Yeah,
glad
that's
to be
right.
Here, finally.
Yeah, definitely. The TGN meetup in the city, which has turned into almost a monthly thing. So if you're in the New York area, definitely get on to the Grenado Slack channel and join us. We'd love to see you there. Tom, you are a fellow watch nerd. People may know you as Expedition 16610, but I've been told you're like some Hollywood big shot as well. Give us a little introduction. Tell us who you are.
So I'm not a Hollywood big shot at all, but I'm a professional stuntman and stunt coordinator for the film and television industry. I've been doing that. This will be my 20th year in film and TV, and this will be like my 41st year in watches.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I was gonna ask like how this all kind of like mixes together, but I guess the watches, you've been into the watch thing for far longer than, huh?
Yeah, I was a little kid, 4 or 5 years old, I put my first watch on, and they've been on my wrist ever since. So it's been a lifelong thing, you know, me and watches.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So, is that something? So it's a pretty, I guess, clear through line that you have then there. Do you have like watches that from the early days that have stuck around in your collection or that mean a lot to you, or has it just kind of been like a consistent evolution since you were young?
I mean, I've got the first two watches that I've ever had. And then, I mean, I've got a bunch of them. So, I've got, the first one ever was a little Snoopy watch. I still have that one. And then I got a Swatch watch in first or second grade. I still have that one. My daughter still wears it, to summer camp and stuff like that, which is pretty cool. I got a Seiko in sixth grade. I still have that one. I just threw a battery in it a couple months ago, actually. So yeah, I have most of my watches from, you know, growing up, unless they've been lost or, you know, sold, which I don't sell a ton, but I do sell some here and there.
Or
give them away to family, budding watch guys. I'll, you know, throw a Seiko their way or something if I'm not wearing it.
That's a good way to do it, because like getting a Seiko, this is a slippery slope getting into watches, and then, you know, once you get the right Seiko there, and it's like it's over.
Forget it.
Now you mentioned one thing in there, unless you've lost them, which of course leads to the Expedition 16610, which we'll get into. Before we do, though, what are you wearing on your wrist? I saw you recently had a new watch delivered. Is that what's on your wrist today?
So I'm wearing, I'll show you, I know nobody else can see it, I'm wearing the Arkin Alterum Stealth from Ken over in England at Arkin. I had ordered the The regular black dial one with the regular titanium finish, but Ken knows my affinity for black watches. So even though I wasn't a prior owner, which I think was like a prerequisite for the Stealth, he sent me a nice note and I got a Stealth. So now I have a blacked out Arkin, so I'm pumped.
Very cool. Congratulations on that. The watch looks great. By the way, what are your first impressions? You've had it for what, 24, 48 hours, something like that?
24 hours. I mean, it's I can't stop looking at it. It's beautiful from the dial to the lume plots, the hands, the second hand. It's a little smaller than I thought. I maybe would like it a little, maybe 2 millimeters bigger, but it's like so comfortable that you have to check to see if it's on still. You know, it doesn't feel like you're wearing it. It's really good. He did a great job. So two thumbs up to, after 24 hours.
Very cool. Yeah, we'll leave a link to this brand down below. Is this the first time that you've seen one of these watches in person?
Yes. I have never seen
Okay.
an Arkin before, just, online and in reviews. So yeah, first one.
Was it just in the TGN Slack there that you were introduced to the brand?
No, you know what? It was if I could throw out another podcast, I
Of
first heard Ken
course.
on Rico's Watches podcast.
Okay.
Ken did one of the very, very early episodes, and I was like, oh, I like this guy. Let me kind of follow along with Arkin. And then I missed out on the first I forget what the first model was called. And I was like, if this guy does something else, I'd like to get in on it. And as soon as I saw this one, like a year ago, or whenever pictures, started coming out, that's when I was like, all right, I think I got to get in on.
It's a good one. And you are and you're a titanium guy. I've surmised, right?
Yeah, I like comfort. The more comfortable, the better, So I love titanium. I don't care if it scratches or anything like that. Yeah, give me everything in titanium. I'll be happy.
I'm with you there. We have I think you and I both share a pretty big affinity for the Tudor FXD, the
Yes.
Pelagos FXD. And you have we both have Marine nationals. However, yours is a little bit different than mine. You went and had it customized. The whole case you had coated. Is it a DLC or is it or how did this work? And did you buy the watch knowing that you wanted to have it modified? You mentioned you're a fan of stealth, so you made the whole case of your FXD black. Tell me about that process. Like, what was it like? Where did the idea come from? And then how did you have it done?
Well, like over a decade ago, I blacked out my Panerai. I had it DLC coated, which I guess it's like PVD. I don't really know what the difference is, but I was told that the DLC coating was a little more robust than PVD. I could be wrong here, but so I had my Panerai DLC coated, and I was always waiting, to have another watch done. I almost did my Tudor LHD. But I haven't been able to find somebody that could do the bracelet. And I wasn't just going to do, the head of the LHD and then have a mismatched bracelet. Basically, as soon as I saw the FXD, I was like, all right, this is, first of all, the watch for me, because it doesn't have spring bars, it's got the lug bars, it's not going to come off. Like, this is great for diving and everything. And I just thought that the blue would really pop with a blacked out case and, bezel and crown. So I kind of knew I had to do it, yeah.
Yeah, it looks fantastic, and it's one of those watches that I like when modified watches come together in a way that looks like it could have come from the factory that way. And this the way that this was been done, it looks like it could have just come directly from Tudor that way. Now, of course, they have done a black case carbon or something like that for the Red Bull Alinghi Racing, which I imagine we'll see more of at some point.
I would think so. Yeah, you'd think.
So it has like a similar look to it, and it really kind of changes the complexion of that blue, like how it appears, which kind of like I don't know makes it almost like subtle or something like that. I
Yeah.
swapped the bezels between my black FXD and my blue FXD, and I thought that worked pretty well.
That was cool. Yeah, as soon as I saw that picture, I was like, whoa, wait a second. This is cool.
But I like the Marine Nationale's countdown and bidirectional bezel. It's kind of like a weird thing. And for some reason, I don't know why we don't see more countdown bezels. I feel like they're, I don't know, in some ways like more intuitive to use a
Yeah,
little
they're
bit,
cool.
but Yeah, and
But
it's
bi-directional is a big thing. I love bi-directional bezels. I have my dad's old two, I have my dad's old Rolex Submariner that I popped the click spring out of so I can make it bi-directional.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I like bi-directional.
Yeah, I think the reason that they put that in there is so you don't like accidentally turn it if you're, if you're like diving and doing something important. And yeah, I've never been in, like you've been diving, I think, a lot longer than I have. Like I've never had a situation where I accidentally knock a bezel and turn it or anything like that underwater. So I don't know.
Just once I've done it.
Once you've done that, okay.
In all the years I've been diving and all my dives, I've only bumped the bezel once on a watch. But you have a dive computer as a backup, so it's I don't know, it's not a big deal. But what's on your wrist?
So I'm wearing an IWC 3706, which is from the 90s. I love sport watches from the 90s. They had like a character that you just don't often find in modern watches these days. I think the brands that come the closest are like the stuff that's on your wrist. Like some of the smaller independent brands, I think, do really cool creative stuff and take risks. This is from the era when IWC was kind of more firmly in that tool watch wheelhouse.
Yeah, they were.
So yeah, it's cool, and I've got it on one of these WOE watches of espionage straps, who I
Very
believe
nice.
you're customized. What is that? When we saw each other a few weeks ago, and you had a strap on your FXD that had it was like a deployant that was aftermarket, even though obviously a pass-through strap has to go through that watch. I'd never seen anything like this. Where did you get that? I meant to take a note of it. Where did you get that thing from?
That was let me think. It's the Zulu Diver Octopod. I think I got it on Watch Gecko.
Zulu Diver Octopod. Okay, I'm gonna make a note of
Octopod.
that.
And it's a deployant
Octopod.
clasp. They have the regular finish. They have black finish. I got the black in 20 millimeter because I like to wear the FXD on a 20 millimeter NATO. I just find it more comfortable and.
Sure.
You don't have to worry about popping out spring bars or anything.
Yep.
So yeah, I just whatever. But yeah, and it comes with a bunch of colors, and it's been super comfortable.
Yeah, that was a really impressive setup that was on it. I need to pick one of those up. I like the fixed lug of the FXD. Are you surprised that there's not more like just modern dive watches that aren't designed like that? I know there's the one kind of like weird Omega, like ultra deep Planet Ocean that I don't even know if they make that for commercial availability. And then there's like the FXD. Is this something that you feel like, you're surprised that there's not more of these things out there?
I mean, I don't know if I'm surprised that there's not more. I would love it if there was more. But I don't I think there's so few of us that wear these, luxury watches, which is what they are. Doing these adventurous things where they might pop off the wrist. I think there are so few of us who actually wear them that I don't think it's a big thing to, the companies to be like, oh, let's make more channel lugs, whatever they call them. But I don't know. But I wish there were more.
It's a cool thing for sure. And yeah, you brought something up there, like not many people use these things for, or like, actually doing crazy stuff. So it's and I think a lot of people refer to these as, it's more of a luxury jewelry, whatever, these days. And I always say, and I drone on about this, watches being what you make of them. And some of these brands that are ostensibly making it is a luxury product because they're still expensive, but it's still a tool watch at its heart. A lot of these things, and they can still be used that way, and they're still perfectly capable of being used that way. I don't know if that like kind of knots you up when somebody comes down on you wearing a watch that costs a little bit of money while you're diving or doing adventurous things or wrenching on the truck or anything like that. Well, no, it's still a tool watch, and I'm
It's
still going
still
to
a tool
use it.
watch, yeah. But I also understand the other side. Like, I do understand if. The Rolex was a huge purchase, and you're at the beach and you're like, oh, maybe I'll just throw my G-Shock on. Like, that's not something I do, but I do get it that I guess it's something that you kind of got to ease into the wearing your watch, doing things and be like, oh, all right, it's still on the wrist. Yeah, I'll keep wearing it.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. It's an understandable position, of course. So we'll come back to that, but I wanted to get ask about your stunt man work and how you got into it. You mentioned you've been doing it for about 20 years now. How did you get into this world?
So I went to college, graduated college in 2002. My brother also graduated right around the same time. He's a year and a half younger than I am. And we basically grew up, making our own home movies. Always, I mean, he was 5 and I was 6, and we had my dad's huge video camera. Just when we were young, they were, silly. But as we got to middle school and high school, we're making movies that had, plot lines and dialogue. And we would throw stunts in there. Just, I mean, we played baseball, we played football, and we rode motocross. Like, we did all the stuff. So we were physical. So we would, be jumping off the roof or, getting hit by cars. Oh, no. And all this kind of stuff. So once we graduated college, it was like we've always talked about the film industry. What would the most fun aspect of that be? And it's like, dude, let's, being a stuntman, what's cooler than that? And then it was a slow process of, finally getting your shot to work on a show and to actually get into, the Screen Actors Guild and all that stuff. It's a big catch 22. You can't, work on a SAG movie if you're not SAG, and you can't get SAG unless you work on a SAG movie. Like, so you have to find the loopholes in there. But yeah, there's a lot of years of pumping gas and waiting tables and working construction and stuff while you get that, two, three jobs a year that maybe the next year was, 6 or 7 jobs, and then it finally builds until I was like, all right, I think I can do this full time.
Did you have a was there a certain a gig that you got or a certain job that you were able to land that you felt like, oh, this is going to be it. Like, this is what I'm going to do now. Like, this is working.
That's funny. That's a good question. Yeah, you know what? I was working on a movie called I Am Legend. It was a Will Smith movie, and we were down in we were was it the Manhattan Bridge? We were down under the Manhattan Bridge, and he's like leaving on a helicopter, whatever scene that was. And it was a couple weeks of work, and I had started to get busier before that. And I just remember being on that job and being like, you know what? I think I could finally quit construction, and I think this might be it. Yeah, and I mean, there were some lean years after that, but that was like 2009, and
Oh, sure.
it's basically all I've been doing since,
Wow.
since
Well,
then.
that's incredible. And so, and you've obviously worked with all kinds of, big shots and Hollywood stars and stuff like that. Were you the kind of guy that was like, have you ever been starstruck by anybody that you've seen, or is it all just kind of like, oh, this is just the job, for me?
I guess you could call it starstruck. I finally got to work with Jessica Biel, who I was mega fan of, who didn't have a crush on, Jessica Biel, who's
Sure.
my age,
Yeah.
whatever. Like silly people, like I don't even know his name, but he played this character Dead Meat in the movie Hot Shots. It was like a silly Charlie Sheen, Top Gun spoof. And it's like, oh my gosh, that's Dead Meat. Like, I don't even know the actor's name, but I got to go shake his hand and be like, oh man, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, that's awesome. Will
And then
Smith,
one,
but this guy from Hot Shots.
yeah, this guy from Hot Shots. I was like, what is he still doing? I guess he's still acting. This is awesome. I guess tying into watches, so the first film I ever worked on was a film called Inside Man.
Love Inside Man.
And there was an actor on that who was in Grease 2. Now, I'm not a Grease 1 fan, I'm a Grease 2 fan. So you might lose a lot of listeners right now at
They're
this
all
moment.
shutting it off right now. That's the hot take of the episode.
So he was wearing a Panerai, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I think his name was Peter. And I was like, this was at the t this was I guess 05. So I had just gotten my Panerai like a year before. I'm like, oh man, nice Panerai. And he didn't know what I was talking about. He's like, oh, this is from props. And I'm like, oh, okay. Which is kind of like my first intro into, oh, just because an actor has like a fancy watch on doesn't mean that he,
Doesn't mean
is
they're
a
an
fan of the brand
enthusiast.
or even knows what it is. But yeah.
That's incredible. So has there anybody that you've come to learn that like is a legit like watch enthusiast in your line of work?
Very, very few, but one that comes to mind would be Justin Theroux. I was working on a show called White House Plumbers. I was a stunt coordinator, and a couple of years before that show came out, he was on the cover of like a Men's Health or like a Muscle and Fitness, wearing a solid gold Submariner. And then when I see him on other side of White House Plumbers, he's got that same, solid gold sub on. And I'm like, Justin, I got to ask you about the sub. I've seen like you wearing that watch for a couple of years now, and it was his birth year watch.
Wow.
But he had a whole story about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was his birth year watch, and like he had to find it, and it ended up being in it was in a Rolex boutique that was like in the building where his dad worked. So there was all kind of tie-ins, and it was like his favorite watch. But he would wear a couple of Rolexes, and he would wear an AP every once in a while. So he was like a bona fide watch guy.
A big time watch. Yeah, that's very
Yeah.
cool.
And I guess also Tom Selleck's a big Rolex guy. Like he always shows up to work in one of many Rolexes, one being like the actual Magnum PI Rolex,
Ooh.
which was yeah, pretty
That
neat.
that's one of those that 15, 20 years from now it'll come up in like a Phillips auction or something,
Yeah, I
but
mean,
like,
you would think, right? Yeah.
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 Especially if he's still wear like he has that continuity of
Yeah.
like it's not just like a show prop, like it was his actual watch. Like
Right.
you get the vibe that some of these guys like actually like these things and wear them. Like you see them in the same watch in like multiple roles or different movies. Like Robert Redford, I feel like there was a whole string of movies from like the 80s and 90s that he always had on the same like 1680,
Yeah, so
Submariner
cool.
or
Yeah,
something,
yeah.
which is awesome. Well, that's really cool. So have you? So I have to ask. You've been doing this for a long time since you were a little kid with your brother doing this stunt stuff. Have you ever had any like gnarly injuries where you thought like, ah, oh, this is good. This could like take me out of the game? Or is safety, I assume, is a huge part of what you do, especially coordinating this kind of stuff. But it, since you've been doing this as a kid, get run over by
Yeah,
all the. Have you ever had any hairy moments?
most of my hairy moments, I have to say, have been from, like horsing around at home. Like I broke three of my ribs at my brother's bachelor party, and
Oh, jeez.
I fractured a couple vertebrae playing rugby and stuff. But like actually doing stunts, I've sprained my ankle pretty good jumping off of a garbage truck. Like the garbage truck's like flying around the corner, and I have to jump off and go into a run. And we do it 5 or 6 times, and everything's great. And it's always like one more, just one more, and on the final one, I blew out the ankle.
Oof.
I had an actor break my nose. We were working on a movie called Leatherheads. It was a George Clooney, Renée
Oh, yeah.
Zellweger movie, and there's this like huge, 300-pound actor, and we rehearsed. And it's like when you're doing a fight scene, basically, like if I'm throwing a punch at you, my fist is going to be like a full foot away from your face.
Yeah, sure.
And it's all in your reaction, like that's going to sell the hit. But he just, they called action, and he clocked me right in the face, and my nose just like exploded everywhere. And he was like, "I'm sorry." And I'm like, "Let's just keep going, finish the scene, finish the scene." But I got hit by a car, and I didn't separate my shoulder, but I tore my acromioclavicular joint. So that kind of had me out for a little bit. Yeah, different things like that. Different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine. So like I know your stance on things like the Oscars and stuff. But do you think that the stunt persons should have a category all their own in the Oscars?
Yeah, so I'm not a big proponent of it. Like I just don't like watching the
Sure.
Oscars or anything like that. But I mean, they're giving, right, like every other category has one. And
Yeah.
I don't think that people really know the extent of how much the stunt people are utilized, behind the scenes. Like when you see somebody cross the street, and like 4 cars come to a stop, like those are all stunt people in those cars. When there's a fight scene, a whole bunch of people around that fight going on, like they're stunt people just in case they get bumped. But there are stunts everywhere.
Yeah.
And to like to give everybody else a category but not us, I think is it's like I mean I don't get it, but
Yeah.
at the same time I really don't care. Keep us out of that. I don't know. I'm just not interested in the award stuff.
Yeah.
They're
Yeah.
cool and all, but yeah, I'm not I don't need an Oscar for stunts. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mixed
You
feelings.
were nominated for an award though. For something that you did last year, if I'm not mistaken.
The show Poker Face. I was nominated for an Emmy.
Okay, congratulations.
Like I said, yeah, thanks. Like I said, listen, I mean, Was it cool to, fly out to LA and like go to an award show and like a huge fancy dinner after? Yes, it's all very cool, but do
It's
we
not
need
your
to sit
scene.
there and like be told how great we are? No, like no, like I don't know. That's not why I do this. I just want to do some, cool action, and I want to go home, kind of beat up at the end of the day, feeling like I did a good physical day's worth of work, and you don't have to hand me a statue for it.
Fair enough. So I want to ask also, because this kind of dovetails into some other work that you've done with motion capture for the video game industry, which is I feel like becoming a pretty big thing. Like some of these video games are getting enormous budgets and go on to make tons of money for lots of years for these big production studios. Games like Grand Theft Auto, and of course Grand Theft Auto 6 was recently announced. I think it's coming out next year. I think these are huge production things, and a lot of them utilize motion capture for a lot of different elements, including some of the more physical elements of it, which I understand that you've done some of this work for the video game industry. Tell me what that's like.
So I worked on Grand Theft Auto 5, and I worked on a little bit of Red Dead Redemption 2.
Both Rockstar games.
Rockstar. They're based out in Long Island. It's pretty cool. I was disappointed because I didn't get to wear a watch, when you go out there. But no, like you put on the suit with the little white balls all over it. Like they scan you into the computer, and then you walk out like onto the main floor, and there's like a movie screen up on the wall. But you're the character that's on the movie screen, and like when you open your hands, like the character's opening their hands and all that stuff. It's like you're in the video game world. It's pretty cool.
Well, so you can see
And
yourself in real
oh
time.
yeah, yeah, yeah,
Oh,
yeah.
cool.
And then they build structures. Like they basically use what's called speed rail, which like kind of looks like piping or railings. A picture like a railing, where they kind of make it in the shape of a car. But then they program into the computer that it's a car, and then you could see the actual car up on the screen. And then you just go through like all the different ways you can carjack somebody, from a positions you could open the door and then yank them out of the car and all that stuff. And you have to run through a whole bunch of different scenarios. If you're beating up people on the streets in Grand Theft Auto, it's you have to attack them from behind, whether it's a kick or punch, or if it's a gun, or if it's a baseball bat. You have to go through all the scenarios, so it's like super repetitive. Like you could spend an entire day just like doing a couple of carjackings or like a couple of beating pedestrians up on the street and things like that. But it's a very cool the way they do it's just really cool, and
Are
just
there
something
other
different.
people in there with you doing it? Like that, like like the victim just walking down the street, or are you just kind of
Oh
like
yeah,
acting
so
out
it's
all this stuff?
So for like a bunch of Grand Theft Auto, it was like me and my brother were working on it. So like a whole bunch of the carjackings, it's like you're playing me and my brother, carjacking each other all the time, or beating each other up on the street.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's so you guys get to work together.
Yeah.
Doing a lot of this. Oh, that's so cool. That must be pretty fulfilling then.
It's
And you
cool.
can, you don't have to like I don't know, I guess be worried about how much you get to hold back or whatever, because
All
it's your
right,
brother.
yeah.
So
We
it
fight
must be
each other
like
really well, yeah.
it must be that much more authentic, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. That's really cool. Have you is are you do are you working on any projects now that you could talk about that are you're excited about?
They just wrapped the movie Smile 2. I don't know if you saw the first one. It was a movie called Smile. It was a horror movie. I don't know, a year or two ago, maybe even 2, 3 years ago. I don't know. It did well. So we did some stuff for Smile 2 this winter. I was working on the new Daredevil
Oh, very cool.
with the same actor. They're coming back. Just like the weekly shows, like Blue Bloods and FBI, that those kind of shows that are like filming all the time in the city, just kind of hopping back and forth, doing different things on those shows. So keeping busy.
All right, very cool. All right, so the last thing I want to ask about some of these projects that you work on. Do you have a sense of this is gonna like this movie's gonna be huge, like it's gonna be big, it's gonna be good, or like this movie's gonna be whatever? Do you even think about that? Do you even care? Does it weigh on you of like the gravity of, oh, this is some gigantic movie that's gonna be some big summer blockbuster or whatever? Like do you feel that when you're on the set and doing work on the movie?
I think you definitely feel it. Like, I've pegged them wrong before. Like, I worked on The Town back in 2009 with Ben Affleck, and I thought that movie was going to be horrible. And then, I mean, I saw the trailer and I was like, oh my gosh, this movie looks amazing. And then I saw the movie, and I mean, the movie's fantastic. But like, when you're working on like a Joker, or like, I always reference The Greatest Showman, which was a musical with Hugh Jackman, and it was just like, we just kept hearing the same songs over and over every day, but they were so good that we never got tired of them. And I was like, I think people are going to really like this movie. Like, I really think that this movie is going to be, special. So you do, get the sense. And I mean, you always hope that something's going to be good, but sometimes, yeah, you're working on something and you're just like, this is garbage. Like, this, like, why are we even putting the work into this movie? Because it's junk. But yeah, you always want the best, and you always perform your best. That's what we get, that's what we get paid to do. But yeah.
All right, so let's jump back over to some of the watch stuff. I mentioned I called you Expedition 16610. That is your Instagram handle. You've got a pretty cool logo around this. What does that mean?
So first off, I have to thank Matt Ludvigson
Shout
from
out to
the
Matt.
he created the logo, just like out of the blue. I don't even think we were talking, and he sent me a message on Instagram and was like, hey man, like, I looked at a couple of the photos, I designed this logo. And I was like, what can I pay you for this? Like, this is great. And he was like, no, nothing. I sent him a bottle of scotch as a thank you, but yeah, so that was all
Nice.
him. But
Nice.
yes, what was
Like, how did, like,
the
what is Expedition 16610?
question? Okay. So I'm a lifelong watch guy. I'm 18 years old, and in 1996, I take my life savings and I buy a Rolex Submariner from a Mayer's AD down in Tampa, Florida, where I'm going to college. That was in February of 96. Later that summer, me and my brother and our friends were jumping off our boat. Dumb stuff, what we used to call power jumping. Like, you go full speed and then, you dive off and whatever. And I slip off and I hook the clasp on, the railing or something as I'm falling off. And as I go flying off the boat, I see the watch go flying. And I was like heartbroken. And so that, I mean, that was 1996. So I start scuba diving in 2015. And everybody, I mean, for years, everybody's like, you ever gonna find that watch? You ever gonna find that watch? And it's like, I mean, yeah, maybe one day. I don't know. So 2019 rolls around, and I'm having scotch with my buddy Greg, who's a master diver. And we start talking about how we can possibly search at the bottom of this lake, because I had a pretty good idea of what I call a search zone. I had a pretty good idea of where it was. And then that summer, the boat sunk at the dock, so I never got to do any diving that summer. So we got everything fixed up, and then COVID hit 2020, so I had 6 months off, and it was like, all right, now I really got to start. And I went at it, and so it officially started in 2019, but the diving got underway 2020, and I now have logged like 30, high 30s, 36 or 37 hours of actual bottom time, gritting out the bottom of the lake and, searching with my slew of metal detectors that cost more than the watch does, and all that stuff. So it's been fun. If anything, it keeps me busy, and it gives, everybody, something to talk to me about. Like, oh, how's the watch search going?
No, I love this. And this was, I think, the first time that I was exposed to you was through this project. And I was just like completely taken by it that you've been going through this. And then I think we talked a little bit further about it when it was when the strike was happening, which was a year or so ago. So I think you were able to get some more dives in around that time. And then last summer, I got certified and I had expressed interest in coming up to helping or at least observing or
It
doing
would be
something like going along with it. I think it would be a lot of fun to
oh,
document it.
it would be a blast. It
So,
would be a blast.
yeah, and I love just the idea of this happening. So have you replaced the Submariner? Did you ever like get a different Submariner or buy a new one? Or are you just kind of like holding that spot of, I'm gonna find this one.
So basically, right after I lost it, because I'm an 18-year-old kid, I wrote a letter to Rolex and I said, "Hey, I spent my life savings on a GMT Master and I'm swimming in a lake and it falls off my wrist and sinks to the bottom." That was like the basically the extent of what I told them happened. Watch. And
Sure, sure.
I said, "I'm not asking you for anything, but you might want to beef up your spring bars or like how you attach the bracelet to the watch." Like that was like basically my whole letter as like an 18-year-old kid. And I got a letter back with, "Call us here at Rolex headquarters in the US." And they basically offered me like almost nearly half off of a brand new one when I was ready.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I said GMT Master.
It's
So,
Submariner.
yeah, so Submariner, but I replaced it for almost half off with the GMT Master 2. Sorry for the confusion there. So I basically had my 1996, GMT Master 2. Like that was kind of the replacement. And I had that watch until 2018 when I finally sold that, when like Rolex prices, started getting crazy. But which, that's like my one regret. I should have never sold that watch. But So I mean, I don't have a Submariner now except for my dad's, two-tone that I inherited. But yeah, there's a spot for like a stainless steel Rolex Submariner that's probably all brown and green right now. But
You love it.
but there's a spot for it when I find it.
So what bezel was on your GMT that you got?
I bought it with the Coke. So red and black. And then I immediately ordered, they were $85 each. I ordered the Pepsi and I ordered an all black one, which they had no problem, giving them to me.
Wow, that's almost hard to even imagine nowadays. If you went up to them and said, like now it's like you can't even get the other bracelet for it. It's
I
a hard
know.
time, let
Yeah,
alone like
crazy.
an insert, a bezel insert. That's so cool, huh? And well, I guess Rolex is ch a lot has changed since this era, and you have not replaced the Submariner yet. So you've kind of gridded out this area that you think it's been less. So you're just kind of working your way up the grid, like a kind of in a methodical, like you have a map that you kind of like, all right, X out. I did this little spot. I did this little spot. I did this little spot. Or like, how do you know? Because you've like it's a murky, potentially low vis areas that you're diving in here. I know you've got a method. Do you worry like, oh man, what if I passed it here? Or do you feel like, no, I go over each of these spots like fine grain. You've got the metal detectors, all this kind of stuff. Like do you think about what if I get to the end of the grid and I don't have it? Well then, all right, we'll start back at this spot. Or like, do you have all these scenarios kind of in your head?
Oh, of course, of course. So basically what I do is they anchor the boat and I go down with what I call a search marker buoy. It's a weighted little, I guess, picture like a yellow donut, and I write the date on it and I sink it into the muck and it floats, like right above the bottom of the lake. And in about an hour, I could search like a 6 foot, diameter circle around that search marker buoy. So I mean, I've got like 35 of these search marker buoys down there at this point, which should mean that those are 35, 6 foot circles that have been searched. But I mean, can a fisherman, come and accidentally hook one of these, search marker buoys and kind of drag it, and move it? Yeah, totally. So I'm kind of worried about that. But I mean, it's a public lake. What am I going to do? If this is kind of the best method I've been able to come up with. And I mean, all my old search marker buoys are still down there, hopefully in the same spots. I come across them all the time and I'm like, "Oh man, I remember that dive," whatever. But yeah, it's basically no vis. Once you get started in the muck, it's like no visibility down there. You're just kind of working by feel and with the metal detectors. And I mean, probably in like 100 hits, maybe there was one that I didn't find. They always seem to find something, whether it's a bottle cap or if it's a fish hook or a pair of sunglasses, whatever. I've always, 99.99% of the time I find what
Something.
sets the metal detector off. And that's, I mean, I'm finding little, tiny fish hooks. So if there's a big steel watch there, I'm pretty confident that I'm not missing it. But yeah, I mean,
You'll find it. You'll find it. I have faith
One day.
that's gonna
That's the plan. That's the
happen.
plan. One day.
What's the most interesting thing that you found down there?
I found an anchor. I found a really cool, I guess they call it a claw anchor. I found an anchor down there that was pretty neat. That was, I'm working in NoViz and there's like weeds everywhere. And I feel this thing and I feel that there's a rope on it. And all of a sudden, it somehow gets tangled around my legs.
Oh, geez.
Because there was like 30 feet of anchor line on there. Like the people must have cut it. And you start to panic. I'm down there by myself. And then you just have to kind of like, okay, stop. I know it's not a sea monster. There's nothing dragging me down into the muck. Just chill out, breathe. And then, I got my knife out. I cut myself out of it. But I found an anchor. So that was a cool thing. I have got that mounted on my garage wall. Like, so when I pull up to the lake house, I see, the anchor out front there. I found a garden lamp, like some kind of solar powered light for the garden, which
All
is
right.
out in the middle of the lake.
It's kind of random.
I found a stash of old truck tires. Like they were all tied together. There was like eight of them,
What?
or yeah, just like the old, skinny ones. From a long, long time ago. So who knows what those, were used for? I don't know if people were using them on the ice, and then when the ice, melted, they sunk. But yeah, I thought I'd be finding cooler things, like somebody else's watch, a gun, or whatever. Who knows? But yeah, no, not really finding too many cool things.
All right. Well, when you get the watch, when you find the watch, then what's the process? What happens? You set it in for like the
Woof.
full service, get the case back engraved, what happens then?
Lots of photography. I'm going to take lots of photos of, where I found it, the condition it was in. I'll get it up on the boat, what it looks like. Then I'll shake it around, and I'm sure it's just going to start running again. I'm very interested to see what part failed. Was it a spring bar? Because those are some hefty spring bars on those old, five-digit Rolexes, and they really stick into the lugs far. So was it something in the clasp, that gave out, or was it a spring bar? I'd like to know. And then I'll probably send some photos into Rolex with the story, but I've got a whole bunch of people that are asking if they could write up the story, which, I mean, yeah, I'll pass it around to everybody. But yeah, and then I'll probably take a Dremel to the back. I like to Dremel like the back of my watches. I don't really have an engraver here in town, so just put something, I don't know, 30 years in the deep on the back. Who knows? Whatever. But we'll
Love
see.
it.
Yeah. So that's like the tentative plan. I don't want to think too far ahead. I just want to find it. I want to be, holding it in my hand and in the muck first.
That'll feel pretty good. It'll be like you could write a book, Shadow Divers 2, part 2.
Muck divers.
The Muck Divers.
And then hopefully it sells at auction for like 17 million, like, Paul Newman's watch. We'll see. We'll see.
Obviously, of course,
Obviously, right?
once the stuntmen get their category in the Oscars and you start winning those things left and right,
course.
then
Yeah.
so I yeah the five digit bracelets are of course a bit different. My initial thought when you said that was the where the where the end of the bracelet, the tapered end of the bracelet, connects to the clasp itself. Feels like a slightly less robust area, at least than the end links connecting to the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be really curious to hear what caused that. And of course, in the six digit references, the bracelets are far beefier and more robust, and the whole watch has got a little bit thicker everywhere. So,
Yeah.
well, that's cool. I love this story, and how it's incorporated into where you've been able to use your diving for what. So you referenced that you learned how to dive, but was that why you learned how to dive? Was this your motivation for it?
No, it wasn't my motivation for it. I mean, it probably, if it factored in, it was like a small factor. I always wanted to dive anyway. Back in 94, I guess, was the first time I went scuba diving. We went to the islands on, family vacation, and we took a resort course, and we dove like a wreck, in 40 feet, where there's like unlimited visibility. And I was just, kind of smitten with it. And then we went back to that same island in 95, and I did it again. And then, I had kids and work, and everything just kind of got in the way. And it was finally, 2015, where I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? If I don't start diving now, I'm never going to dive. So, but
Well, very cool. I certainly appreciate that. I was 40 when I got my certification last year, so that's when I started, and I'm already like looking forward to diving season coming up
It's so good, right? Yeah. You know,
here.
congratulations. It's awesome that you got certified. I love it. And
Thanks.
another guy wearing tool watches to do tooly things. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I got the one thing I haven't done is got any of my watches case backs engraved. If Cole Pennington is listening right now, I'm sure he's shaking his head. I don't even know where to take it to get it engraved, and I don't want to get something like cheesy engraved. Like I want it to be, I don't know, poignant, like years later, you know? So I was thinking of the like my first dive after my certification, which was down in Florida, diving that wreck in the Gulf with all the guys from TGN and in the industry, getting the dive profile, that dive profile
Oh,
engraved on the case back, I thought might be kind of unique,
I like that. Yeah, that's something you don't
timeless.
see,
So
I love
So we'll I don't know if I'd have the confidence to do it myself with the Dremel.
it.
But we'll see who'll get there. Well, Tom, it's just been a huge pleasure talking to you today. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come onto the podcast, man.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome. I've been loving the podcast. I just listened to the keyboard one we were talking about with Diego, and I've got a couple windows open on my computer now. I'm hoping I don't go down this rabbit hole, but
Be careful. It's that's
oh
another
boy.
slippery that's another slippery one.
I see that.
All right, so we've got next month is Watches and Wonders. Anything that you're hoping to see from Watches and Wonders?
Not specifically. I mean, I would love to see like a Black Bay Pro with like a bezel you could rotate,
Ooh,
I'm all
yeah,
about,
okay.
rotating bezels, something like that would be cool, but I don't know. It's just a fun time. I love just seeing what comes out, and I'm not very judgmental, like when brands get crazy, I love it. When brands, kind of keep it close, I understand that too. So yeah, I just like seeing what comes out of, the watch shows like this. It's always fun.
Yeah, we're pretty spoiled for choice these days.
Oh
There's
yeah.
all kinds of great options, including the one on your wrist. They're super cool watch. Congratulations again
Thanks.
on that. Where so you are on Instagram in Expedition 16610.
That's it. Yeah, you can find me there. And the only other place I really spend time is, the TGN Slack. Those are like my two, socials that I go on my phone to check. Yeah, that's about it.
All right, well, we'll leave links to both of those down below. Thanks again to Tom, and thank you for tuning in. Reminder to get subscribed if you want to keep up to date with all the news coming out of Watches and Wonders next month. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, take care.